Greetings from K9 to Diddly Dum, Diddly Dum, Diddly Dum. End of message.
Happy day, faithless listeners, and welcome to episode 195 of the Diddly Dum podcast, the fourth best Doctor Who podcast out there. I'm Doc.
I'm Mark.
And I'm not saying anything.
Ha!
Normally, whenever we have someone as elevated as our guest with us, we do a very extremely complicated introduction. But we've spent so long trying to sort out our Skype connection this evening that we haven't really got the time. So,
it's only 50 minutes after we were meant to start recording.
Given that in less than 3 weeks, the Capital 7th convention will be starting, I'm sure you'll remember who that familiar voice is. It's none other than the cyber coordinator himself, Mr. Tony Jordan.
Hooray! Excellent, yes.
Tony, you're looking as young as ever, and that must explain why you're still getting promoted.
It's taken me 37 years to climb my way back up the greasy pole to become coordinator again. And don't talk to me about greasy poles.
Capital. Right. So in the run-up to the Capital each year, we like to get together with Tony so he can tell us all about what's happening and all about how he's frazzled to a crisp. But on Saturday the 27th and Sunday the 28th of April this year, at the Holiday Inn in Birmingham, Junction 7 of the M6. That sounds so sophisticated, doesn't it?
Whoever came up with that name for the hotel, really?
We have the Capital Seven Wonders Convention. Remind us why it's called Seven Wonders, Tony.
Because it's the seventh capital and because Barry Ward came up with the name.
Oh, Seven Wonders of the World, I suppose. Oh, yes.
It could be. But Barry suggested it last year and I thought, yeah, that's fair enough. Works for me.
And still, I mean, when this was first mooted by Tony and his DRAS cohorts, we thought it'll never last. And yet, is this now, will this be our fourth year as the official podcast of the DRAS Capital Convention, Mark?
Really?
No, it's actually the fifth.
The fifth?
Yeah.
Yeah, I find it hard to believe that it only took you only 1 year to get used to us.
I never cease to be amazed that we put up with you, but there you go.
So, Tony, venue, we've always been in the Crawley area, sort of southish London, west Sussex, haven't we?
Yeah.
But this year, we're up in the Midlands.
We are. I spent from September 2022 to early April 2023 trying to find a venue for this event. I went around Gatwick area. I went up to rural Surrey, to Woking, Guildford. I went out into the Thames Valley as far as Reading, and I went around the M42 corridor and trying to find a place that had roughly the facilities we needed and where the prices were not astronomical was horrendous. And we only signed up for the venue we have 10 days before last year's event. And as you know, we launched it at the previous event. So I had to have it signed up and ready. This is not ideal, this venue. It is smaller than the Aurora and the Crown Plaza. Therefore, we've had to reduce the number of tickets we can sell. Although our costs, everything we're paying for has gone up.
Mm.
And yet we've had to reduce it for the number of attendees. So the square meterage is 22% smaller than at the Crown Plaza, but in fact, the footfall's only going to be about 13% less. So although we're more compact, it's going to be quite busy. For people who are driving, it's a brilliant venue because you are 1 minute from Junction 7 of the M6. For people who are travelling by train and are used to travelling to Crawley or Three Bridges, it's not so good. What we've been telling attendees is get to New Street and either get an X51 bus from round the corner in Cars Lane or get on a Walsall train, four stops to Perry Bar, which is 3 miles from the hotel. And there you can either get the not X51, but the regular 51 or a cab. And it's a 10-minute drive from there. That's how it is. We're having to work very hard on the logistics for our guests who don't drive. But we're there just about, I think, now.
Are you driving, Mark?
Yes, I will be driving up there by train.
So it's only a couple of days ago that I worked out that X51 thing myself. We're not actually staying at the Holiday Inn.
Are you going to the Premier Inn?
No. We were going to, but we found somewhere cheaper. In fact, I rang them this morning to check that we'd been properly booked in. She said, "Oh, no, we've not booked you. When did you book?" I said, "About a year ago." Oh, when? Well, the end of this month. Oh, you don't mean this weekend. So, I wonder if there'll be free parking at the Holiday Inn as there was at the Crown Plaza for non-guests.
Just register, because we're having so many people come in, just register the vehicle when you get there at the parking eye thing at reception. They're not going to question anyone. It's going to be so many people coming in and whatever. So, definitely just register your vehicle at reception and you'll be fine.
We'll just say, "Do you realize who we are?" I said, "No." Thank God for that.
We'll be escorted off the premises if they do.
Exactly.
They probably have photo fits of us anyway.
That's a challenge for me. I might have to work on that.
We were just looking at a map of the hotel.
Yes.
The conference layout that you sent us.
Yeah.
Matrix Data Bank is always...
The Matrix Data Bank is autographs. It's normally two separate rooms. We're just using the one room because it's big enough and it will work. And my original plan was to put six tables in, but there's going to be seven on the Saturday. The Eye of Harmony is the photo studio.
Mm-hmm.
The Untempered Schism is where people go in and out. Arcadia Academy is now a combination of Arcadia, which is the dealer's room, and the Academy, which is the artists and artisans room. And I've had to reduce the size of that, just like everything else, because there's just not the square footage there. And then we have the Panopticon, which is for the panels and the presentations, and Saturday Night Up at the Junction, which is our entertainment this year.
Panopticon, a very long, narrow room, or a very broad?
No, as you can see, the drawing is actually roughly right, because it does narrow the further back you get. There is another part of that suite behind it, but I've been unable to utilise that, because they say that according to what they were told by fire regulations or something, that part cannot be locked. I was going to use that for the dealers, and I can't, so we're not using it.
Oh, is that because overnight they'd want to...
Exactly.
So, yeah, that's reasonable, yeah.
We can lock where they're going to be on the Friday night, so they can set up on Friday night, but they couldn't have done that in there. So they're going to have to de-rig on Saturday night and re-rig on Sunday morning, and we'll move the stuff into the Eye of Harmony or something. It's smaller than we've had before, but it's there, and we're pretty much all systems go.
It's all going to be down to the guests and the panels and everything else, and the people who are there enjoying themselves, isn't it?
Say, the attendees make the event.
Yeah, absolutely.
LobbyCon, as it's called nowadays, is a vital part of it.
Yeah.
I have said to them, don't do what the Crown Plaza did 2 years ago and have about three bar staff and we had over 300 people there over the weekend. They know the hotel has not got a single room left available on the Saturday night. It has over 190 bedrooms.
Right.
And we've taken, I don't know what the allocation was, but we've done this something like two-thirds of them. And I'll say this again, get agency staff if you need to, because if you don't, you'll have a lot of unhappy clients, residents, and you'll lose out on massive F&B revenue.
Yeah, because the one thing you can guarantee is that we'll be buying drink until it runs dry.
Yeah.
As I've said to every hotel we've been at, and once they get to know, they realise it, as the Crown Plaza did, Doctor Who fans like a drink. Not in a nasty way, but they'll just stay up drinking.
Yeah, because they enjoy socialising, and it's a rare opportunity to do so, really.
Well, what I'm doing on the Thursday morning, I've got to go up for a two-day conference in Liverpool with work. So actually, fortunately, in a way, I'll be coming straight from Liverpool to New Street, which I suppose is a shorter journey. And over the last few months, we've had cropping up on social media everywhere, one by one, teasingly, as everywhere, the guests coming. So the prominent names that we've got are Sylvester McCoy, of course, the Seventh Doctor, Sophie Aldred, his consigliere as Ace, Carol Ann Ford, of course.
Oh, brilliant.
Susan. Fraser Hines as the redoubtable Jamie, and Katie Manning. The name doesn't ring a bell.
Has she ever been to the capital before? I don't think so.
No.
A very rare appearance.
Hang on, so Katie's going to be in the same autograph room as everyone else?
Yes, it's going to be interesting.
And chaos shall break upon the universe.
There's a certain inevitability of chaos. Whether you put Katie in a room of her own 3 miles away, it'll still be chaotic.
Yes. Love her.
So which other guests have you inveigled into your web?
Well, let me... Shall we go through sort of roughly the running order?
Right. Yes. Yes, that's an idea.
You know, we started announcing guests last May, and it might seem random at times, but actually there is method to my madness. Uh-huh. Hard to believe.
He's been telling us this for 6 years. I still don't believe it.
I know. So we're starting with the big hitters. So we've got Sylvester and Sophie we're opening mm-hmm. with, which is always a brilliant double act. And I've seen them double acting for far too long. 35 years.
And appropriate for Seven Wonders, of course.
Well, it wasn't accidental. You know, I must have spent seconds planning that. But what we have got, and someone we've managed to get recently through various contacts, is Hugh Spite. Hugh played, he was the renegade Dalek Supreme in Remembrance of the Dalek.
Ah, yes.
Oh, right.
And so how fantastic. He phoned me up a few weeks ago and he said, I've worked with Sophie, I've worked with Sylvester, but I don't think I've ever done a panel with them on stage. So how fantastic to have Hugh there. And we might just also have a black renegade Dalek there as well. So can you imagine the photo shoots?
Lovely. Oh, he was in Greatest Show in Galaxy as well, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
Was one of the clowns?
Yes, he was one of the clowns. Unfortunately, Hugh and Dean Hollingsworth are on different days because we could have had the bus conductor and a clown on stage together. That would have been a 5-minute panel as neither of them spoke.
Oh, Dean Hollingsworth. Oh, I'm really pleased to see him back again because he was great last year.
Actually, Dean and Lila, his amazing wife.
Yeah.
She was lovely.
Yeah, they're flying into Birmingham on the Saturday and they're staying with us till Monday. And Dean is going to be on a panel with Paul Lavers, who we announced some months ago now. Now, Paul is touring the UK in the stage version of 12 Angry Men. And he'll be on stage on Saturday night, I think, in Cambridge, spending Saturday night there, coming to us on the Sunday, spending Sunday night with us. And then he's going off to Blackpool for the next week of it on the Monday. So that works out really nicely because we're a sort of halfway house almost.
Mm.
But Dean and Paul are going to be on a panel together that is called The Androids of Great Bar. And you can see how my mind works.
Well, I'm not entirely sure, to be honest, Tony.
No comment, Doc.
He's appearing in a performance of 12 Angry Men.
Yeah.
Well, what better preparation for meeting a gathering of Doctor Who fans? Only kidding, listeners. Paul Lavers, of course, was the sort of blonde hero in Androids of Tara, wasn't he?
Yeah. He was still in his 20s, I think, then. But yeah, he's never been to a society event before, I don't think. He played Farah.
That's it, yeah. Sort of sidekick to the Colonel. What does Tom Baker say about him? or whatever he says about him.
Another fine piece of podcasting.
Yeah, this is gold.
On the Tom Baker years, he usually says something like how the guy playing the monitor had once been, a fabulous Lord Alfred Douglas at the Old Vic or something. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're Simon Lack. He's one of those that Tom admires so much, he refers to as the mighty Simon Lack.
Do you know, I haven't got the vaguest idea what that was called, but I remember suddenly the location. That was shot at Leeds Castle, not far from Maidstone in Kent. And I recognise the kind of Grand Vizier there, or whatever he was called, a kind of colonel of the regiment, was the mighty Simon Lack, of course, who had been in the early productions of Noel Coward's great successes.
The thing with that panel is, it's purely conceptual, but we know from last year that Dean has got 101 great stories, don't we?
Yes, exactly.
I have no doubt that with his extensive CV over several decades, Paul Lavers has as well. And obviously the concept of the panel is you've got someone who was in the Androids of Tara, someone who played an android, and because of the way I'm regarding it is the hotel is in Great Bar, therefore they are the Androids of Great Bar. That's why it is what it is. That's why the Saturday night entertainment is Saturday night up the junction, because we're up at Junction 7, so it's up the junction. I'm sorry, you should know this is how my mind works.
It can't be the Androids of Barra, can it?
No, it can't be.
Anyway, right, so back to the running order.
I must say that it was over the last few months, or it might have been several more months than I thought it was, I did notice that Dean's sort of Red Flamingos in Sunset thing, the film that was being released, was being premiered, I think, was it first in Guernsey, where they live, and then in Soho.
Didn't they come over to Leicester Square somewhere, or did he just get lost?
Last Flamingo of the Red Summer Sun, that's it. Sorry, Dean, but if you want ageing podcasters to be able to pick a film title nonchalantly out of the air, it really needs to be shorter than that, like Grease or Zulu. But I think Dean was the great example of someone who, if we'd actually said to him, what was it like playing someone in a mask on a speaking part as a robot, we'd have got a 5-minute interview out of him. But because we talked about his life instead, as it invariably does, turned out to be far more interesting.
Yeah.
And always goes back to Doctor Who, yeah.
I've always said that Doctor Who is just a climbing aboard point. Remember my interview with Stephen Berkoff 5 years ago?
Yeah.
He got a question about Doctor Who about 35 minutes in from someone in the audience. I had no intention about talking about Doctor Who. It's far more interesting things to discuss.
Yeah, same with Julian Glover, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, and an example of someone who was wonderful to talk about things that were not Doctor Who was the late, great Shane Rimmer, who had stories about Peter Sellers in Dr. Feelgood,
yes.
And he was there when he had the accident and whatever. Absolutely fascinating. John Moreno, another brilliant, unexpected guest who talked about Bond movies and goodness knows what else.
Was it John who got conscripted into the French Army on a holiday one? Yes,
These are the stories that I would like to hear. But that's just me, but obviously.
Yeah, and the late Stuart Bevan talking about working with John Wayne.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And how he suggested they end up in a skip and whatever. And and John Wayne's, when he saw him at the rap party at the Grosvenor House on Park Lane, Stu, you know, all that sort. These are magical moments.
Yeah, of course, the indomitable Annika Wills as well. Talking to her about just about the 60s in general is just
She doesn't remember any of it, to be fair. She really is one of those who was there and doesn't remember it. And also, you have to remember that Annika has withdrawn from conventions since COVID. So you had that chance. You could do it 5 years ago or whatever. Not happening anymore. So I cherish the time that I talk to some of the senior people within the world of Doctor Who, because they're not going to be around forever, but then none of us are we?
Well, this is why I cherish each capital, to be honest, because each one is going to have moments in it that are just never ever going to be repeated again anywhere. And, you know, every guest and everything that happens there, you know, you need to cherish it and savour it while you're there, because you never know what's going to happen.
Absolutely. I remember when we did Panopticon 7 in 1986, and among the guests were Dennis Spooner and Ian Martyr. Dennis Spooner died a matter of weeks afterwards. Ian Marta passed away a couple of months afterwards.
Lovely,
you know, they were full of life and whatever. You never know, do you? And obviously, Ian was only in his early 40s. So it happens.
Perhaps instead of Seven Wonders, you could rename it Catch Them Before They Pop Their Clogs.
A little bit on the nose.
But certainly, ever since your panel with Steve and Tony, I've always, whenever anyone ever mentions the Beverly Hills Cop, I've always brought up, of course, you know who they cast first in Eddie Murphy's role, don't you?
I didn't know that, did you?
No.
Extraordinary. Quite extraordinary. And then he was ad-libbing most of it, such as sticking the banana up the exhaust of the car and things like that.
Who would you say is the most tragic of Shakespeare's characters?
Oh, well, that's very interesting. I think the most tragic probably is Richard II, because he has so many bloody lines to learn. I mean, he doesn't stop yakking from the minute he comes on stage. He can't keep his bloody mouth shut.
Anyway, so when I come to interview Ms. Manning, what shall I ask her? What do you think is the most tragic role in Doctor Who? last year, I asked her a question about Doctor Who to start with, and it completely threw her.
It did, didn't it? Yeah, so strange.
There we go.
Any other panel pairings?
Well, yeah, I mean, on Saturday, we've got Kevin Clark and James Goss together. A panel called Writing for the Doctor. Obviously, Kevin did Silver Nemesis. James has done a lot of various stuff, including he did the novelization of The Giggle. So, and he's done a lot of online stuff.
And I've read his Pirate Planets and City of Death as well. They're really good.
Yeah, he's done some great novelizations.
There you go. So there'll be some interesting discussion about Writing for the Doctor. Then on Saturday afternoon, we've got a panel that is called Christmas with the Doctor, and all three of the guests on that panel have appeared in Christmas specials in the 21st century.
Let's just try to guess, Mark. Come on, let's guess. I'm going to guess. Oh, you've not managed to get good old Rochelle Baynart, who played Janice Goblin, have you?
Might have done.
Oh, honestly, Tony, you're becoming so predictable in your.
If you were going to see people from the Christmas specials, I'd like to see someone like Michael Troughton.
Would you really?
Yes.
It's your lucky weekend, mate.
Is it? Yes. I have to say he was great. What a lovely man as well. A really genuinely lovely guy. I remember in the last capsule he came along to. Lovely chap. Really interesting to talk to. Very frank and open as well, isn't he?
Yes. And when it was the unveiling of the blue plaque to his father last July at Mill Hill School, he was brilliant, and Roxy, his wife, was there, and they do the convention circuit here and abroad together. They're a double act. But here's a thought for you. Michael has really got a fantastic CV, apart from Minder. Yeah. He was obviously in The New Statesman. And did you know that Graham Harper directed two of the later episodes of The New Statesman?
No, I do.
Therefore, I don't know whether they've ever met since the days of doing that 91 and 92, there was over 30 years ago. But Rochelle, I'm absolutely thrilled to have got her. Robbie Dunlop and myself worked hard on getting her as soon as the Christmas episode, The Church on Ruby Road, was over. Sat back, looked at the reaction, and it was obviously the Goblin song was the big thing. And then Rochelle appeared in the BBC Three documentary, was it? Doctor Who Unleashed, isn't it?
Yeah.
She was interviewed in costume and everything. So she was clearly identified as the principal Goblin, and she sort of mimed the song. Hence, she became known as Janice Goblin, didn't she?
Yes.
And we managed to track her down, and we got her to agree to come along.
It's lovely.
And we're absolutely thrilled. I think that she's probably a little bit nervous, but I've been keeping in touch with her on a semi-regular basis. And I think her, along with someone of an old pro like Michael, and then Richard Price, who's done 16 New Who episodes, and Cyberman and Sea Devil, all that sort of thing. I think it'll be a really interesting mixture of things.
He does a lot of signed giveaways, doesn't he, on his Twitter page, I seem to remember.
Richard, and he's going to bring along a full-size cardboard cutout Sea Devil and a Cyberman head. I'm not sure which Cyberman it is because he's been in two or three of them. He's a local lad. He's not far from the venue, so it made a great deal of sense for Richard to join us. I think that'd be a really interesting panel, and we'll see what people have said. But Rochelle, of course, played Poe in the reboot of the Teletubbies.
I'm sorry that Rochelle's feeling nervous. We have warned you, Tony. Don't tell them that we're coming until they're already there.
Well, it's brilliant that she's on a panel with someone, two people like Michael and Richard, who are both old hands at this, because last year, they can give her a bit of background. Last year, Cammy Darwish, who played the guru in that wonderful cameo he had in the Flux, where he was on the top of the Himalayas or whatever, he'd never been to an event before, but we put him on with John David, and John just had a quick word with him before they went on stage, sort of put him at ease, and Cammy had a great time, and I'm hoping Rochelle will as well.
Looking forward to it.
Hopefully I should be more mobile than last year as well. So.
Well, I've got a fold-up walking stick ready for him.
Yes, Mark's sciatica struck at the wrong time last year. Don't forget to bung a crutch in your boot just in case, Mark.
No, I never leave the house without a crutch in my car now.
Mark, if you forget to bung a crutch in your boot, then I'll bung a boot in your crutch.
Swiftly moving on.
Yes.
One of the things that I've worked on for this year was the anniversary started basically at the very end of October. There was the documentary that David Tennant fronted. Then obviously we had Tales of the TARDIS came. Then we had the three specials. There were so many extra things. And then we finished up with Church of Ruby Road. So we have Rochelle Baynart from Church on Ruby Road. Another of the panels on Saturday is Richard Latto and Rich Tipple. Richard is highly experienced radio presenter, works on loads of documentaries and stuff like that. And he was the archive producer of that first documentary that David Tennant fronted about the classic series. And with Richard on stage on that panel, we're going to have Rich Tipple, who is the principal colourer for the Daleks in colour.
Right. Yeah, I know him well from a lot of his. I've been following him on Twitter for years. He's another.
There are two people who were involved with the anniversary. And then we're going to have Phil Ford and Joshua M.G. Thomas. Phil wrote two or three of the Tales of the TARDIS. Joshua directed all of them. Again, it's going to be his first ever Doctor Who convention, like with Rich Tipple, like with Rochelle Baynart. We have some absolute newbies. And I'm looking forward to that because we can have a look. So we're going to cover the episodes and the colorization and documentaries and Tales of the TARDIS. And of course, Katie was in Tales of the TARDIS. And so was Fraser, who's going to be one of our guests on the Sunday. So I feel we're really covering what happened, and I thought it was relevant to do that.
Yeah, definitely.
And what, Sylvester and Sophie as well?
Well, yeah, that's true, but we've already talked about them. But yes, you're absolutely right. So I think we're going to have a Tales of the TARDIS photo shoot on the Saturday afternoon at some stage, hopefully. But it should be good, and I think it has some relevance. I know it's a few months ago now. But it's the last, basically, since December the 25th, there hasn't been any Doctor Who on TV or whatever. So it's looking back at the most recent stuff. So one of the panels on Sunday morning is called The Underwater Terror. You have Catherine Howe, who was in The Underwater Menace, and you have Maureen Lane, who was in The Macra Terror.
Oh.
So I've just a bit of season four love there. And yes. Obviously Fraser's along later in the day. On the opening Sunday morning, we have our very great friend Graham Harper and we have Keith Temple. What's the connection? Keith wrote Planet of the Ood. Graham directed Planet of the Ood.
Oh.
So the panel was originally called Beneath the Planet of the Ood. However, and I shall give you the name of a guest who probably when this goes out won't have been announced. It's our last guest. Is Colin Spall. Now, Colin and Graham went to Italia Conti together in the 1950s, and Graham cast Colin in both Revelation of the Daleks and Rise of the Cybermen. So there's a natural sort of bonding there. So it's now called Beneath the Planet of the Ood and Beyond, because I've continued expanding the guest list. My original plan was to have 24 guests. We've got 28 or 29 now. So that, I think that will be very interesting again. He was Lilt in Revelation of the Daleks. There was the double header, wasn't there? There's Trevor Cooper and Colin Sport in that. They were the ones who were sort of talking about what's going on and this and that. And he was Mr. Oh, what was his character's name in Rise of the Cybermen? He was sort of henchman to Lloyd Pack.
Oh, right. Yes. Yes.
I'm such a terrible fan. I can't remember. Mr. Crane. Yes. He was yeah. Roger Lloyd Pack, John Lewis's henchman, but he came to a grisly end. So that's that. And then on Sunday afternoon, we're celebrating 25 years of Big Finish.
Ah.
With Sadie Miller, who was at the Capitol 2 years ago and went down a storm, and Daisy Ashford, who I've wanted to get to the Capitol for a few years, and Mr. Big Finish himself, Jason Hay Gallery. So that should be an interesting one.
Yeah, that's interesting, because as Sadie was Liz's daughter, isn't Daisy...
Carrie John's daughter, yeah.
Caroline John's daughter.
Yeah. And they do tend to... If you get one, you sort of try to get the other, because they're both... Who blood runs through their veins, doesn't it? Doctor Who is absolutely in their DNA. And, of course, they've both recreated the roles that their mothers played in Big Finish.
Well, that's quite a coincidence, actually, because purely bizarrely, by chance, Mark and I are both our mother's sons, aren't we, Mark?
We are.
Can I take that under advisement, please?
Oh, well, our most recent podcast was a big It's Up for Mums episode, so...
It was, yeah. There's a lot of mum love.
You should always pick up your mum. You miss them terribly when they're no longer around.
Indeed, indeed.
And then, perfect for a late Sunday afternoon, in conversation with Robert Shearman, and he's in conversation with me.
Ah,
he is. We almost fell in love with him last year, didn't we, Mark?
He's just so genuinely, gently, consistently funny and nice.
He's a wonderful bloke. I know what the first question is going to be, and it's going to be 40 minutes where we just go wherever we go. It's sort of the Sunday equivalent of the Katie Manning afternoon panel.
Right.
That's the way I see it. And they're the two panels that I'm actually doing over the weekend. It's just going to be, let's talk and let's see what people want to say and what questions we get and where we go. Robert is so erudite and such a lovely guy, as you both know.
Yeah. We've been lucky to interview him twice now. And each time it's just the interview goes on for ages because he's got so much to talk about and it's all stuff you've never heard before. So it's great.
And he said, when I said to him, this is what we're going to do, Rob, he said, what are we going to talk about? I've got nothing to talk about, nothing to say. It's like you're having a laugh. So I'm looking forward to that very much. And then we finish the weekend with Monochrome Magic, which is Fraser and Carol Ann Ford.
Ah.
So we go out with a bang, I think, with two of the stalwarts. And it's perhaps ironic that there are still more 60s companions with us than 70s, really, isn't it?
Yes.
It's sad, but it's true. There's Lou, there's Lala, and there is John Levine. But you think of those who've gone, if you include the unit people, and obviously Richard left us on Christmas Day last year. Whereas you've still got Carol, William Russell is still around, though. He's obviously he's 98 and his health has deteriorated.
Yeah.
You've got Pete Purvis, you've got Annika, you've got Fraser, you've got Padders, you've got Maureen O'Brien. So that it's incredible. I know there were more companions, but it is incredible. And again, we should savour the days that we can see them on stage and engage with them.
Particularly as we've had lost quite a few people recently. We've lost Michael Jaston, who we saw at Capitol a few years ago, arguing with Colin about Brexit.
Do you know, Michael and Colin would always... And I last saw Michael at Time Lash in Germany in October 2022. And that would continue like that off stage, but they were actually the best of buddies, but they had differing opinions on things. But yes, Michael was so with it still. And I absolutely loved him. I think we had him at two Capitals, and I'm delighted we did. Obviously, we've lost Richard Franklin.
Pamela Salem, have you...
Yes, I met her once about 12 years ago. Met her at the same time as Simon Williams, who was incredibly funny.
Yes, really?
I really should get him to a Capitol. He's a hell of a bloke.
Chunky.
Yeah, Chunky Gilmore. I should have got a remembrance panel, shouldn't I?
I still, even though I'm old enough, I still remember him more for Stairs Downstairs than... So I tend to think of him as a cat and a rotter. rather than a brave defender of the Doctor. And, of course, John Savident.
Yes.
Who may have only had a brief role as a squire in The Visitation, but seems a far more of a character who you're thinking, oh, surely he's been in something like Doctor Who far more times, hasn't he? Because you'd imagine he would be a perfect...
perfect fit, yeah.
Should we say creepy villain?
But listen. I mean, obviously, it's Corrie defined his career, didn't it? So that's fair enough. But to be, if you look at Toby Haddock's wonderful in memoriam videos that he puts out every year, you do lose a lot of people, and it's just that's life, isn't it?
Mm.
And there's nothing we can do about it. But moving on, we've missed a couple of things out. Going back to Saturday.
Yes.
By the time this podcast is released, I believe we'll have announced the Cavalcade of the Daleks.
Oh.
27th of April is exactly the fifth anniversary of the Parade of the Daleks at the Aurora.
Yes.
And I wanted to mark that. So we're going to have a little cavalcade that are going to trundle down the corridor at the Holiday Inn, turn in past the bar, and hopefully there'll be some people having breakfast who don't know what's going on. And these Daleks will surprise them. And I've got a little something planned for the Sunday morning with the Daleks as well. But this is all down to the man who's brought it all together for me is Tom Connor, who runs Tom's Refurbishments. And you must have seen him.
Yes, good old Tom. Tom's a great guy, yes.
Well, Tom's a friend of the show now, yeah.
There you go. So Tom is behind this, and he's liaised with Ian of the Daleks of Somerset and other places. There are literally thousands of Daleks in this country. They're all over the place. So what we're going to do is on the Saturday morning, before we break for lunch, those Daleks that have done the parade will be either side of the stage, and then basically it's going to be a little Q&A, Tom explaining what the Daleks, what they are. Obviously, people will recognise them, but interesting things about them. It's not a long panel. It's going to be half an hour, but I think it'll be really interesting as a man who knows his sink plunger from his exterminator and every Dalek ball there is, because he's worked with all of them. So that works for me.
A cavalcade of the most ruthless, amoral, destructive beings in the cosmos. So effectively, you're going to empty Parliament.
One Dalek can destroy all, yeah, you know, I mean, you don't need five Daleks, let's be honest.
He was a great guy, Tom. Mark brought his War of the Daleks game board last year. One of his Daleks is broken, and we were going to do a sort of, because Tom said, I can mend that, and, you know, a sort of thing across several podcasts of, oh, we've sent the broken Dalek to Tom this year, and then we'd have photographs of him, you know, mending it and redoing it and bringing it back. But unfortunately, he very selfishly decided to move house shortly after Capitol, so we...
Well, you can track him down. He is a lovely guy, and he's very gregarious, very friendly. I know that when it was 2 years ago, he asked me if I could get Jill Curzon to sign his model Dalek gun from Dalek Invasion Earth. And I got it back, he was made up.
Oh, was it the original one?
Well, no, it's one he'd made, but it was... You know how perfect his copies are. And so he was made up with that. So that's, anyhow, that's called, and I'm nothing if not predictable, Panel of the Daleks.
I was rather hoping you were going to tell us that the Holiday Inn has spent the last 12 months installing glass walls in all their lifts, but there we are.
There aren't any lifts in the hotel. It sprawls. It's got about 10 steps down and 10 steps up. There's no lifts. It's a real 70s hotel that's been rejigged and whatever else. But there are no lifts. But that should be fun. And then also on Saturday, at some stage, we will have the presentation of the third Terence Dix Award for Writers.
Oh.
And I'm saying no more.
Okay.
Well, hang on, I'll just check. Yeah, Hayden, are you going to be available on the Saturday? Okay, we'll check. Hayden's over the moon because, Jodie's been in conventioning in Australia last week, and Dave Kitchen, apparently the autograph queues were enormous. And while he was waiting, he just turned round because the queues were so big they had them sort of snaking round. One big folding back on each other. And he looked across, he saw that the guy just across from him was reading Hayden's...
Child Out of Time.
Hayden's magnum opus. Child Out of Time, Growing Up Without... And Hayden is absolutely thrilled.
Dear me.
Strangely, I don't know if they do this in Australia, but they slapped a sort of price sticker on the back of it, which covered up all the blurb. So we've managed to convince Hayden, well, if he didn't know what it was about, he must have bought it purely on the on your author's name recognition alone, Hayden.
You do really do suck up to Hayden, don't you? So I think we've covered most bases.
So what's... I never thought it would happen with me and the girl from Clapham. What's happening at the junction?
Well, first of all, be there, because there might be a special version of Up the Junction to start us off. It's going to be pretty much as usual, but it's still great. You're going to have Alistair, Tom Baker impression, then he's going to do his items in the auction. Then you're going to have Stephen Cranford and hopefully Rob Shearman doing the main auction. Then we have the world premiere of Devious Episode 5. So it'll be a good fun night, I think.
The auction's always really good fun.
And there's some fantastic items up for grabs. I will probably still be typing the list of lots out on the Saturday afternoon, because that's what happened last year.
I really have to go. I'm conducting a seminar on multiple personality disorders, and it takes me forever to fill out the name tags.
We have a new trader this year called Glass Crocodile, and her name is Emma. And she does stained glass sun catchers. Look her up on the internet.
Yes.
And she's getting stock ready for the Capitol. And we've got her because she knows the Daleks of Somerset. She got hold of me last summer about it. But she's specially produced, I haven't even seen a photo of it yet, a stained glass sun catcher, a one-off unique one for the auction.
Oh, right.
How fantastic.
Because I've seen she does stuff like the alien head from Alien.
Yes.
And what's the bounty hunter called on...
Boba Fett?
No, Hal the Archer.
Oh, so yeah.
That's really interesting.
And similarly, last year, Tom Connor had done a special display Dalek gun.
Yeah.
And he's doing another one this year. But this year, to tie in with the theme... It's going to be a remembrance. I think it might be the black... It's going to be the Renegade Dalek Leader gun replica. He's specially doing it for the charity auction again. So these are rarities, if not unique, and there's plenty more beside. It's fantastic that people feel happy to support the charity auction. And the two main charities this year are Blue Cross, which is a pet support charity. Mrs. J is a volunteer in our local Blue Cross shop, and they do good work. And Barry suggested the other one, which is the Midlands Air Ambulance. Air Ambulance are all volunteers. They're incredible people. And it's expanded over 30 years plus, I think, Midlands Air Ambulance. Its original base, I think, was at RAF Cosford, which is only just the other side of Wolverhampton, just going into Shropshire. I think that was their original base. But it's got bigger over time. The demands are enormous. There are three helicopters that are funded by it. Covers six Midlands counties, including Gloucestershire, Herefordshire, Shropshire, Staffordshire, where I live, the West Midlands, the whole of the West Midlands, which is Birmingham and all that, and Worcestershire. So it is the biggest air ambulance region in the country. So I'm delighted that we're supporting them as well. I'm really up the junction.
We can't leave friends out, so... Cutaway Comics, I don't think we know them, do we, Mark?
Who?
But the Cutaway Boys are always good value for money in the bar late at night.
Excellent company, yes.
Because they've always just come back from Galley. So they've got some endless, filthy anecdotes to tell us.
It is packed because we've got the dealers and the artists and artisans in there. We've got, obviously, Glass Crocodile, Big Finish are there. Alistair's there doing his raffle, as always, great man. Galaxy 4 are there as the main dealer. Colin Howard is doing his one annual event with Michelle, bringing along his art. Keith Barnfather's there with Time Travel TV. Mooncrest Models are there with Gary Glover, who provides us every year with the Terence Dix Award, his fantastic statue of the Roger Delgado master. Fio Trithui and Georgia Cook are there with their art. And GF9 Games are back again, their Battlefronts. They'll be bringing their games along. They're based in Nottingham, so they came on to me and said, oh, it's much closer to home this time rather than... There's a massive games industry in Nottingham, because that's where Warhammer are based and loads of other things are. But so they're coming on with their stuff. Obviously, Tom Connor is there with his refurbishments. So it's going to be really, really packed within the artists and dealers' room.
And Gale Force 9 Games, what are they...
They do board games. They're a gaming company, and they came along with a new release last year, and they're good people.
Besides being tremendous singers, they're church people.
They're part of the Nottingham Mafia.
Yeah, oh, I love a board game, me.
Lex took me to Warhammer World just over a year ago. It's huge. Apparently they're building a massive new factory, but Warhammer World is something else. It really is.
I've actually got a Warhammer just down the road from me. I've never actually been in.
I remember buying the first ever edition of Warhammer, the actual fighting game, when it was just purely orcs and dwarves and stuff, and black and white box, and yeah, it was great. It was a very exciting time.
Lex has been big into Magic the Gathering for some years, and they've done a massive Doctor Who release of stuff.
Yes,
the last,
they have, haven't they?
Last year. So that's all ready for people to sign. And when we were down at Riverside for the Caves of Androzani screening a few weeks ago, took down to especially purchased Peter Davison card and a Nicola Bryant card and that sort of stuff. They're fair. There's been lots of trading game cards and whatever the years, but these Magic the Gathering ones are, can I say, they're not more at market because they're more expensive, but they're a niche market, should I say. But I think Magic the Gathering's huge nowadays.
Yes, it is.
So are we just about done then?
I was going to say, while we're on the subject of Dwas, that's what we've been talking about. Was it last weekend that you had Caves at Riverside?
It was about 3 weeks ago. It sold out in less than 4 hours. It was extraordinary.
Wow.
There was Peter Davison at his first society event for 22 years. Nicola Bryant. We did have Martin Cochrane due, but he had to cry out due to ill health. So Matthew Waterhouse came in at late knockies because, of course, he has a cameo with his head spinning around Peter Davison at Regeneration. And then there was Graham Harper and Eric Sayward. So virtually the vast majority of people who we could possibly have got were there. Roger Lim didn't reply. Robert Glenister couldn't make it. And Barbara Kinghorn lives in Spain and we just couldn't get anywhere. We're trying to find her. And that's about it from Caves. But it was a huge success and we are pressing on and there'll be more events this year.
How's Riverside going? Are they? Because there was a rumour that they were might be closing down.
Oh, well, they went into administration a year ago, and they're still in administration, I think, but they're still functioning. We have a very good relationship with them. They're very happy with how it goes, because especially these events are held on Sundays, when if they have things in the theatre, that's a dead day. You know, we can pack the place and bring in a huge amount of income for them. I should know, because normally I drive down on the day and drive back to Staffordshire, but that particular day, I had a couple of bevvies afterwards, mostly with Rob Shearman and my good friend Amy Greville. And it's, you know, it's £7 for a pint of Asahi. They're doing all right out of that, aren't they?
Well, in that case, Tony, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you, Tony.
We shall see you in about 3 weeks.
Can't wait.
Less than that, especially by the time this goes out, it'll only be about...
Of course.
Two days.
Do we know what time check-in time is?
You're not staying at the hotel.
Yeah.
Oh, that's, of course, what I'm talking about.
I know.
But that's irrelevant.
Let me rephrase that. No, actually, no, hang on. What am I talking about? I was asking on behalf of the listening legions, Tony, many of whom may well be staying at the Holiday Inn.
All right, go on, ask again.
So, and do we know what time check-in time is on the Friday? And
It's 3 o'clock check-in time, and check-out is 11 a.m. And one thing I do have to ask them about is if they have a left luggage store. I'll have to check on that when I go to visit them just before the event.
So you can put your luggage in before you check in, yeah.
When you check out, if you're staying just till the Sunday, if you check out at the Aurora, they just opened the door to a room and they accepted no liability. I shall see if they have any storage space. One of the many questions I'll be asking them.
Well, I know you're always exhausted at the end of each capital turn, but I'm sure you won't check out at the hotel.
If I don't check in, it could be interesting.
Tish.
Yeah. It doesn't get any easier organising these things. But there's not many weekend conventions left nowadays, so we keep trying to get the flag flying. A one-day event and a weekend event are totally different animals, but I've said that to you before, haven't I?
Yeah.
There's so much more you have to sort out. So hopefully it goes well. It won't be through lack of trying.
No, it never is. So, I just realised how potentially rude or potentially polite I could sound simultaneously.
That's very much your forte, though, Doc.
Right, in that case, we shall see you in several weeks, and I'm sure we shall see many of our diddly dumblers. We're still, if we ever dare to update our podcast platform to something that provides us with audience figures, we might end it all.
Yeah. That sounds like Twas going into the 21st century. Yeah. Diddly Dum goes into the 21st century.
No, I don't want to. I want to stay in the 70s.
I certainly can't still do what I was doing in 1976.
On that bombshell.
Ta-ta, everyone.
Goodbye.
Bye, Diddly Dummers.
You have been listening to the Diddly Dum podcast. Find us on Twitter at @diddly_dum. Or on our blog at diddlydumpodcast.wordpress.com, where you can find links to us on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music, Facebook, Instagram, and Mastodon. Or email us at diddlydumpodcast.yahoo.co.uk. Diddly Dum, the empty space that circles time.